Chapter 72. The Dead and the Damned. I could not speak when I found Harriet. She had covered Sally's face with a blood-soaked handkerchief.
"Oh, March," she shrank back. "What have we done?"
There were heavy footsteps and a man's voice calling, "Here they are." Geoffrey, the coachman, and his two companions appeared breathlessly.
"Milady?"
Geoffrey asked, and I found I could not look at him.
"Stay with the women,"
he told his companions and squeezed past me up the alley. His heavy footsteps faded and stopped, and I heard a gasp as a man might make if he is punched in the stomach. And then a strange noise, a cry gathered and growing into the howl of a man who has lost the mistress he adored. There was a severed finger in the dirt. The woman and her children were dead by the time we returned to the square, from slum fever, no doubt, and Dick, the young footman, had laid a blanket over them. She still had my piece of silver wedged in her fist. I cannot remember when I found out that Marjorie Kitchener was Hargob Hanratty's sister-in-law. She did not advertise the fact, and she had told him of our plans in the hope of getting us stopped. But Hargob had other plans. If we caught the attacker, so much the better. The streets were so quiet because he had ordered people inside. But he did not want us taking any unnecessary risks, and just to make sure, he had sent a message to Sidney Grice. I do not know how I got through the next few days and nights. I only know the gin did not help. After 3 days, Geoffrey, the coachman, came to see me. He was whey-faced and his eyes bloodshot. He was very quiet and respectful. Lady Brockwood would not have wanted him to be otherwise, he told me. I tried to say how sorry I was, but he brushed that aside. I told him I was quitting as a detective and was about to tell Mr. Grice. "Oh no, miss." An odd smile came over Geoffrey's lips and he shook his grizzled hair. "The way I see it is, you got my mistress killed, and you will get her killer or die in the process, begging your pardon, miss. But after that, you can drown in your own piss pity for all I care." He made a deep bow and spoke confidentially in my ear, though nobody else was in the room. "God damn you, and keep you rotten, writhing in your box. You self-righteous bitch." He straightened up. "Good day, Miss Middleton. I will see myself out." There was no point in telling him that I had damned myself a long time ago. I put away my gin and had a long hot bath. Sidney Grice was mashing a boiled onion, though it did not take much effort. I helped myself from the domed dish in the middle of the table and sat opposite him.
"You have a choice."
He did not look up from dusting his mush in white pepper.
"You can destroy yourself, and if you do, you will never recover."
How can I ever forgive myself for what I have done? I picked up my fork for lack of anything else to hold on to.
"And I am the one you portray as arrogant."
He sowed his dinner with salt. "I do not understand." I put my fork down.
"Who are you to forgive yourself for what has happened?"
He banged the cellar on the table.
"It is for the injured and perhaps the God you believe in to forgive."
He slipped his napkin out of its bone ring.
"I shall continue my proposal with the alternative."
He tucked the napkin into the top of his waistcoat.
"You can destroy the man who murdered them."
"Can I?" Sidney Grice formed his food into an exact square before he replied,
"With my help, you can do it or die in the attempt."
He rotated his plate 45 degrees.
"Either way should atone for your mistakes."
"Is that all they were?" I asked wretchedly.
"Your plan was defective."
He filled his tumbler.
"But your motives were immaculate."
He raised his glass and looked at me through it.
"And our net is ever tightening."
"Is it?" I asked hopelessly. "Is it really?"
"We have hold of one rope each, March," He closed his fist. Will you be the one to let go and set him free?
I did not reply, for we both knew the answer to that.